Welcome to Top Advisor Marketing, where you will learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your practice. Brought to you by Top Advisor Podcasting, a done-for-you podcasting solution built just for trusted advisors. And now, your co-hosts of Top Advisor Marketing, Kirk Lowe and Matt Halloran.
Hello and welcome to episode number 36. Today we have a very, very special guest, Paul Kingsman. He's going to be talking about warrior advisors have a laser-like focus. Now, I have to give you a little bit of a backstory on this gentleman because it's absolutely phenomenal. If you just type in Paul Kingsman and Olympics, awesome video shows up. In fact, I showed my kids the race that we're going to spend a little bit of time about. But he is a speaker, author, and an executive coach. In 1988, he won the Olympic bronze medal in the men's 200-meter backstroke. He trained for 13 years to swim a two-minute backstroke race at the Olympics and won this medal, the bronze medal, by only 0.04 of a second. So with all of that, Paul, welcome to the podcast. How are you today, sir?
Thank you. I'm doing well, thank you. And it's a pleasure to be talking with you both. I'm looking forward to it.
And I have really enjoyed the time that we've spent. You and I spent a little bit of time on the phone a little while ago. And of course, my children are competitive swimmers. And so they were so flippin' overwhelmed that I got to talk to you at all. And I showed them your video. And really, the best part about it is you've really built an enormous amount of stuff off of what you're referring to as this distraction moment. So would you mind telling everybody that story?
Sure. So before I swam in 1988, I had been training for 13 years, specifically for the Olympics. When I was nine, I saw the 1976 Montreal Olympics. I set myself a goal to go to the Olympics and win a medal. I had no idea, obviously, what time it would take to win that or the money involved. 1984, I went as a 17-year-old, had a bad experience, came back strongly in 1988. The focus for me was the men's 200 meters backstroke. And so I ended up winning the bronze medal by 0.04 of a second. And when I got back to New Zealand after several months, actually, having watched the video a number of times, I noticed that the guy who came fourth to me actually turned his head on his third to last stroke and then again on his very last stroke, having caught sight of me into the wall. And it cost him. That's easily 0.04 of a second. So it really showed me just what getting distracted looks like and what it can potentially cost.
And really, we experience this every single solitary day. Now, in a swim meet, 0.04 of a second is really, it's not a huge amount of time, but it wins races. But you've made this very applicable to our industry and financial services. In fact, one of the things that we were talking about before we recorded today is this great Bruce Lee quote, which is the successful warrior is the man with laser-like focus. So we're going to talk about sharpening your focus, and we're going to talk about your book, The Distraction Proof Advisor. Kirk, well, what do you have for Paul here today?
When we were talking about having Paul on the show, and Paul had sent me his book called The Distraction Proof Advisor, which you can get on paulkingsman.com. I went through the book trying to figure out, you know, what we're going to talk about today. Paul has so much stuff in that book, a ton of great practical lessons and tips. When I got to chapter four is sharpen your focus. And I saw that Bruce Lee quote and I was immediately tuned in. And the reason that I want to talk about this today with Paul is because I think a lot of our advisors and the relationships that we have, Matt, we find oftentimes that advisors really struggle staying focused, implementing their marketing. And I think the things we're going to talk about today have a huge impact and influence on those.
Yeah, it's the squirrel or shiny object syndrome that we deal with all the time with financial advisors. So set the stage for us here, Paul, if you don't mind.
Certainly. And you're both spot on, 100% correct with what you just mentioned. Just was looking through a book, which I am going to drill into a little more over the next coming weeks. It's written by Atul Gawande, and it's called The Checklist Manifesto. And one comment that he made really caught my attention. He said, human beings are built for novelty and new ideas. We are not built for follow through and accountability. And when I thought about that, it really struck a chord with me because very quickly, exactly as you mentioned, we see a shiny new object and we race off to that and take a look at that while we forget or leave at least what we're in the process of doing. And I think as humans, we're hardwired to be more concerned about what we're potentially missing out on than rather looking at what we have right in front of us. If we've said, hey, these are the four or five steps that are necessary to achieve the success I want, but what if I'm missing out on that? And that then, with everything that's available to us on media, everything that's coming at us at a million miles an hour, all of those things now start distracting us because we just don't want to miss out on anything. And so it makes it very, very hard to stay focused and locked on to the task at hand. And so that's why I love encouraging advisors. This is the poster child for distraction as far as an industry goes. And yet advisors know that the tough thing is advisors in this industry are intelligent people. And so they get very frustrated with, I know what I need to do, I just struggle doing it. And so that's where we're coming from with trying to help them out.
Well, let's focus very, very specifically on some of the behaviors, Paul, that you have seen advisors do that take their focus away from where they should be focused.
Sure. So to start with, I think a lot of it comes down to understanding the need for a process, understanding the need for a system. When you look at great athletes, all of us just work automatically to various systems. We take the thinking, the emotional situation, whatever we might be in, we move that right to the sideline. Kind of comes back to the Steve Jobs thing of just using, you know, wearing the same type of clothes first thing in the morning, because our emotional energy, our emotional bandwidth and mental bandwidth is finite. So I want to move to the side any unnecessary decisions that I need to make. So that means you start setting your day up, frankly, as you're finishing the office the night before. Mm-hmm. So again, leaving a note with three priorities for the next day. How you're going to walk into that office to begin the day, so you then finish the day strongly. But also beginning the day strongly, having a set routine that you follow. So you get up, you might have a quiet time, a devotional. For me personally, it's now going to Starbucks and writing. Mm. For the advisor there, it's coming into that office and understanding that, okay, I'm going to flick on email to see what's there, but then I'm turning it off. Mm-hmm. This whole notion of being accessible 24/7 is driving people crazy. It's making them think I'm valuable if people can get to me. And what's happening is that's getting in the way of productive work. And so, again, it's setting up that post-close for the day and the pre-day opening where you've got that routine that you slot right into. So that's one of the things I'd start with for advisors. Finish the day strongly. Look at those three things you're going to hit when you get into the office. Don't give headlines a chance to get in the way. Out of the office, go home, good rest, good sleep. Opening routine in the morning to the office. Then you've got your office opening routine. Check email and then email system off. Those three priorities that you left there the night before, that's where you're starting.
You know, I absolutely love this. My old boss, which many of our listeners have heard of, a guy named Ron Carson, who's one of the most successful independent financial advisors in the United States. I remember when I first started working there, one of the things that he made us do at the end of every day was it was called the Six Most, which was a list of things that we had to do so that we could turn our minds off when we left work, because we knew we were already prepared for the next day. And Paul, I'm a person who's like, okay, he's really smart and successful, I'm just going to follow what he says. But then when I started diving into it more psychologically, doing a lot more research on specific things like time blocking, focus, you know, professional athletes and how they become where they become and what they become and how they become it, that you're so freaking right on, man, that's so important. And the 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, that's not service. Okay, that's right. Reaction. And I really want to make sure that our listeners understand that, because especially when it comes to marketing, right, you can have your marketing run 24/7, but that doesn't mean that you have to. So let's continue to get even more specific with this, because when we're talking about the four ways that advisors get distracted, what are some of the other big distractions that you found?
So I think one of them that advisors really struggle with, working with the smaller, what they see as unprofitable clients, and this is a tough one, especially working with a big organization where you might have a manager who's saying, hey, you got to carve those people off. And what's super important at that point, and what I've found very helpful when I was in the industry most recently, was having a client service matrix where you know exactly where that client's going to fit relative to your book of business. And why that helps is because you're going to then clarify and set the expectations with that client right out of the gate. So for instance, if they're a small client and they're expecting to be touching base with you every week, just not going to work. If I'm talking with a client at that point, or a prospect, they're not on as a client at this point because they haven't gotten through the hoops I need them to get through. Mm-hmm. If they're a small account and small balance and they're comfortable with an annual review, portfolio review, or maybe two annual reviews, but one over the phone, if they're comfortable with that, that's the first one. If they're going to follow our investment structure and strategy, that's the second one. Then I would consider then bringing them on. But if they say, we're expecting to hear from you every 2 or 3 weeks, it's just not a good fit. Sure. And here's the other thing that advisors struggle with. Even when they guarantee, they say to you, hey, once a year is just fine, and then they keep coming back at that point. That's the sit-down meeting, the face-to-face. This just isn't working out how we first described. So we've either got to address the behavior or we've got to change the relationship completely. It's one of those two options. And you give the client the choice, but as soon as they make it, you're holding them to it.
Paul, is there a way that you can, an advisor can create an expectation and maybe even define that? Here's how every client relationship should unfold. And when it starts to veer from this, I need to do a check and balance meeting.
Yeah, that's a good question, because a lot of advisors ask that question. And when I ask them if they have a client service deliverables matrix that every new person, every prospect, they're mentally slotting that person in on that matrix. Do you have one that you follow? And here's what I often hear. Yes, I do. Well, actually, no, I don't. It's in my mind. So I guess I do. It's like, no, you don't. It's got to be a document that it's back facing. It sits at the back of your business, and it sits at the back of your mind, and you use it as a filter system to trigger any little issue that you're listening for. So for instance, like you mentioned, you're hearing somebody say, hey, once a year is just perfect, and then you're quick to follow up as an advisor. That's great, because the types of clients who I work with, just like yourself, that's pretty much all we're finding that is necessary for right now. Obviously, the market can go up and down, and that's not a huge consequence to us right now. There may be urgent issues, and give us a phone call. But by and large, this is when and where you and how you can expect to hear from us. The moment they go off course and look to be there a little more for you, you've got to be very proactive and understand the more time I allocate to that person, the less time I have to give to my top clients who are doing exactly what I've told them they need to do.
Now, that matrix thingy you just mentioned,
yes,
I'm going to help you rename that.
Okay.
You know why? Because anything that has 4 or 5 words in it sounds like it's not that important. And that sounds like a critical document for people to have.
Okay.
So
would you call it? Or we can talk about that.
We can chat next week.
Sure.
And this is a perfect learning opportunity for everybody. When we can package stuff, it seems way more important. And sometimes advisors think it'll be on their brain if we can get the right name.
And I want to bring this back to marketing real quick. So we're going to pull this idea back about spending time with the unprofitable clients and making sure that you have a clear and present client culture, right? Which is how I communicate that, or I used to with my coaching business, Paul. We used to really set up what client expectations and cultural expectations were. But this really can start with marketing. And so, you know, we really harp on this because this is a marketing podcast. So I always want to try to be able to bring this back to marketing. You can set your client experience, your client culture with good marketing. And we can also, if you have the focus that we're talking about today in your marketing material and in your brand, you might not even get in front of the frequency of small clients that you are getting in front of now because you're casting too wide of a net. Paul, one of the biggest things that we have problems with is advisors will drive out into the middle, or, you know, drive their boats out in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, throw out a big net and really hope they catch a whale, right? Mm-hmm. But in fact, what they're reeling in is a whole bunch of crap fish that they don't want, or things that they really don't want, like a shark or something that's going to ruin their net, because they're not laser focused. So let's move on to this next thing. When we're talking about focus with marketing, let's talk about elephants a little bit, because I think that's something that a lot of our clients and a lot of our listeners think is like the greatest thing in the world to land that one big elephant. But that can also be a distraction too, can it?
Great point. Absolutely. And let me touch on a couple of examples around, you know, what we hear a lot about today is niching regarding a particular industry. I would say as an advisor in our business that we had, it wasn't so much niching relative to a particular type of business the clients were in, but it was a very clear niche based upon the client's value system and behavior. And so, for instance, we had wonderful clients who we loved, who we received a lot of referrals from at the $300,000, $400,000 level. And they followed the one review a year, what have you. They were just neat, wonderful people and were actually reasonably profitable for us. On the flip side, we fired, I remember one time we fired a $3.25 million client because of two things. Firstly, we said we are not trading regularly in this account. That's not what we do. And he was okay with that. He kept coming back at us, but we finally trained him in that. But then he talked rudely to two staff members that we had. He talked rudely three times to them over the course of 4 weeks. Mm. At that point, he's out. He's not part of our mix because the value system is just not the same as how we're aligned. And so relative to chasing elephants, what's beautiful is when you do get that big client, that client relative to a sizable bank account, a sizable portfolio come in, and they're nice people. So again, you know, where we're coming from is, yes, we want the assets, definitely. That's how we're going to grow. But very, very closely and early on in the relationship, we're watching the attitude. We want to know, is this a good fit? Do they respect our advice? Are they going to track with our advice and everything they say, everything we say while the market's going great? Or are they going to bail and want a second opinion when things go a little south and we're still saying, just keep focused on the end objective?
So you're talking about the difference between some psychographic market niche and demographic market niche. So I think it's very important for people to understand that too, because especially if you're going to have a specific market niche, it doesn't just have to be engineers, right? It can be people who have the same values. Maybe it's the same location. Maybe it's the same charitable inclination. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to create a niche market. And in fact, the more out of demographics you can get into more psychographics. And if you want to look that up, guys, just type in psychographics into your Google search and a lot of really great information shows up. But Paul, thank you very much for that, because I think we are so focused in this industry on gross dealer concessions. You know, what are we going to be able to make off of the client? That can also be something that we lose focus on instead of really enjoying going into work. I'm going to use another Ron Carsonism. Ron had done the same thing with a huge client, and the client said, I can't believe you're firing me. And Ron said, I can't believe I'm doing it either. You know, he says that in speeches all the time, because it really gets to that point. Oddly enough, Paul, that client did the exact same thing to one of Ron's team. And Ron was like, nope, that's not, you can't do that. So you do have lines in the sand, but a lot of our clients are focusing on the wrong things. So let's go back and talk a little bit more about what are the sorts of things, like if you could categorize them, what are some of the things that they should really spend their time on? And then how, this is my favorite, how are they going to reduce all of the noise that they've surrounded themselves with now?
Yes. So the items, firstly, that they need to be spending their time on. Firstly, they need to have a crystal clear identification of what their ideal client is. What are these people going to look like? What are these people going to want? What are the important things to these potential clients? Number two, they need to be resolute in deciding if these people don't fit these boxes, they are not coming on board. I can't tell you how many advisors have called me with a problem client, and the first thing I've asked them was, did you see this coming when you were bringing them on board? And their very first response is, I knew it from day one. Wow. I shouldn't have brought them on board.
Yeah.
So I think advisors have got to listen to their gut on some of this stuff when they're not getting a great feel from that person. But I think you go into a prospect meeting with the view of, how can I disqualify this person? And raising enough red flag questions that if they tick this box, this is a non-negotiable for me at this point. Now, there's some education that's got to go on with a new client. That's fair enough. But your time is precious. And we all think, hey, how do I reorganize my time? How do I restructure my time? You can't. We've all got 168 hours in the week. That's never changing. And so the issue becomes, what do I need to take care of most and how do I do that? And at the moment, what most advisors are doing is taking care and choosing to take care of the urgent more than what's important. So that's one of the issues I'd say regarding bringing on new clients. And it leads to that second point. How do they reduce the clutter? How do they reduce the distractions out there? Interesting environment that we're living in more than ever. We are accessible. Where before, years and years ago, you literally had to carry a soapbox to get up and speak. Now everybody can get to you. It's ubiquitous with our culture today, and it gets harder and harder to ignore these things. But again, it's like any habit. And I would challenge advisors, I do challenge advisors when I speak with them, to develop this laser-like habit of knowing exactly what it is that's going to get you successful. Therefore, when you see something that is not in that list, because you can't do everything, when you see something that is not on that list, you're moving right by it.
Mm-hmm.
You are moving right on by. Now, that takes time. It takes time, and it's small steps. It's like getting used to turning off the email for an hour. Well, the advisors will say, well, gosh, my clients need me. That's rubbish. If you're in a car and your cell phone dies or you lose your cell phone, you're going to go an hour without it. If you're on a plane, you're flying from here to Dallas. I flew last week to speak to a group. That's 3 hours. No one can get to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're not indispensable as what you'd like to think. And no one is. So it's also being very clinical about those distractions and sometimes bringing in somebody to hold you accountable, but being clinical, like the phone is off. I'm not answering calls between 7:30 and 9 o'clock. This is for me personally, because that's my prime writing time. That's my prime creativity time. For the advisor, it might be after a meeting, when they've had a long meeting, the phone is off, or they schedule a further half hour on their schedule where there's no phone calls. They're now putting in notes. No matter if they just landed their biggest client and the temptation is to go off and go and celebrate and have a coffee somewhere, first discipline is putting in those notes, and the phone is still off. You're still in a meeting until those things are done, and then your assistant has been given the next list, the next to-do list for that particular client. It's a little discipline, and it sounds like it's easy to do. It's simple to understand. It's just not easy to do, but it's a habit that they've got to build. So there's an example, for instance, on taking care of reducing just the clutter that's going to bombard them as soon as they're done with a meeting.
I want to get back to something that I said in the introduction and that you reiterated, which was you trained for 13 years for a 2-minute race. Advisors are inherently impatient. We're entrepreneurs. We're salespeople. And I totally understand the desire to just move on to the next thing. But there is a level of discipline, and that discipline is a muscle, right? That is something that you have to practice. It's not something that you can just turn on and turn off. It's something that you truly have to work up to. And this is honestly one of the reasons why I've been a life coach for a long time. And in January, all of my life coaching clients would always say, oh, Matt, I want to lose 50 pounds. All right. So they go to the gym, they work out for 3.5 hours, they're dying, they're in pain for 4 weeks, and then they don't exercise anymore. It's because they didn't walk before they run. And we all have to make sure, especially when we're practicing focus and trying to reduce distraction, it's not going to be perfect the first time, but it is definitely going to get better as you practice. Is that a fair statement?
It's exactly right. It's going to get better each time, but just backing up a couple of steps, the tangible goal, the tangible objective, the objective has to be tangible. You have to be able to see that clearly. I'm not talking about any hypnosis or any stuff like that. I'm just talking about have a very clear imagination about how am I going to feel when I achieve that goal to start with. Now, here's one of the big advantages that athletes have that most professional people don't have to start with. At the first minute of the day when they get up, they are going into an environment that's positive. It's positive and it's focused in one direction. They're going to be meeting and swimming and literally immersed with people who are on the same mission. And the challenge now as an advisor is you have all of the stuff coming at you a million miles an hour, and it's thrown out at you by people who don't give a rip about your mission. They're just providing things that they think might be helpful or might sound helpful. So it's coming with that perspective of, hey, where do I want to get to, and what are the important steps? And you mentioned a good point about It's little steps first, and they're not so little when you think, hey, if that's the only step that I need to take right now, it is the biggest, most critical, most important step. I don't care how small it might seem to anybody else. Right now, this is mission critical that this gets done and gets completed properly.
In the Shinto religion, one of the things that they say is, how do you climb a mountain? And the answer is take one step towards the mountain. And we as Americans, or really Western philosophical people, if we want to climb the mountain, the first thing we do is we go to REI, right? And that's not really what should happen. You should start getting your mind into it. You should start really working at that sort of focus. And guys, everybody, all of our listeners, let's get back to this. 13 years for 2 minutes, right? 13 years for 2 minutes. Now, and Paul, I'm going to have you maybe argue with this point here, and you might or you might not, but this is something that I say from a marketing perspective all the time. You're a professional. Everybody who's listening to this podcast is trying to increase their knowledge. They're trying to become better. That is a professional. Okay. Why do you look at your behavior so differently than somebody like Paul? As a professional Olympic level athlete, the stuff that he did in order to get the bronze medal is the same sort of behavior that you have to do as a financial advisor to be professional. Am I off there or am I?
No, you're exactly spot on. So let me give you a visual illustration of that. You go in to see your doctor. He refers you to a cardiac specialist because he's not sure what he's seeing, but he thinks there could just be something that needs a little closer inspection. You meet with a cardiac specialist. The cardiac specialist, wonderful person, they sit down and they tell you all the steps now of what they're seeing and what needs to happen and why it's just critical that we get these levels to a certain point, that we're going to have to go in and clear out these veins or these arteries, that we're going to need to do some special fine-tuning around the entry and exit of the lungs. And he sits back, takes out a pack of cigarettes out of his drawer and lights up in front of you. And so as advisors, here's what I would argue very strongly. What right does any advisor or any professional out there talking about financial planning over the long haul with a client have? What right do they have to say anything like that to a client when they're not living it out themselves in their own life and own business? So I think that's important that they take a look at that. It is a case of practicing what you're preaching, or is it just head knowledge and verbalizing what they know, but not living that out. And that's going to come through at the end of the day with how they view themselves and how they view their business and speaking from experience. So that's what I would answer back to the advisors staying focused and locked on to building the business that they dreamed about when they first started this.
Well, before we wrap up the podcast today, I'm going to do my little wrap up, and then I want you to have an opportunity to help people immerse themselves in your distraction proof world that you've created. You know, we'll talk about your, I want you to talk about your website and your book and the fact that you can hire Paul as a speaker. He's an amazing speaker, everybody. You have to watch his YouTube videos. They're really great. But let's bring this back to marketing very quickly. Most of you will have a marketing technique. You'll do it for like 3 months and then you will stop. Or you will do a marketing technique. It works really well. And it works so well, you stop doing it. Marketing is no different than preparing for the Olympics. Marketing is no different than being Michael Jordan and taking 1,000 free throw shots every single solitary day over his entire career. Listeners, you have to give it time to work. And as you continue to give it time to work, you can continue to tweak it to make it better. But if you don't have a marketing plan that's a solid 12 to 18 months and you're going to stick with it for 12 to 18 months, you have no idea of the success or if it's ever going to work. So just like Paul stuck with it for, since how old are you? Nine, did you say? Seven when you started?
I started when I was eight.
Eight. Okay.
13 years.
So 8 years old, he started focusing and training for something that he wasn't going to go to the Olympics at nine, guys. So you have to give it time. You have to have patience, and that patience is a muscle that you have to exercise. So, Paul, this is your opportunity to do any sort of promotion you want. We are so happy to have you on the show today. Cannot wait to continue to work with you in the future. I know Kirk had said that he's going to talk to you a little bit about repackaging your client experience thingy with Bobby, but tell everybody how they can get in touch with you, please.
So my website is paulkingsman.com, and so you can jump on that. We have a free giveaway right up front. It's referral language that works. It's actual real language that we've used that we know works. I see a lot of scary stuff put out about language to use and asking for referrals. So you can go to my website. I have a weekly video blog. We're coming up to 52, our 52nd week next week, 52 weeks. Every week comes out Thursday morning, just a 2-minute video clip that just gives you an idea or something to be thinking about, something to be bringing to you as on a personal level, as well as your business. But I just want to touch on that last point you made about it takes time. And when, you know, you think of marketing, if any advisor knew that, hey, after 15 touches, that client is going to be on board, they wouldn't stop for a second. And unfortunately, they do that with their marketing. They do that with their asking for a referral language. They do that with their processes, and they lose sight of the fact you've just got to keep going. And it's like that with marketing. It takes time. You can't see the results ahead of time. You've just got to know and believe you're doing the right stuff. Keep listening to guys like yourself who are coming out with helpful ideas, and just keep going and not get pulled off track by either office colleagues or other people chucking a whole bunch of irrelevant stuff out there online. But yes, jump on my website. You'll see helpful ideas. I've been in the industry since 01. I've sat in these meetings, most recently with an RIA for 4 years, from 2012 to 2016. We doubled our assets. We went from 110 million to 240 million. They're now just under 300 million. We increased our A clients by 65%. And when I met with the principal 3 weeks ago, when he said we're just about at the 300 million mark, I said, what have you changed? Because I knew what his answer would be. I said, what have you changed with your structure? And he said, Paul, you know, we've changed absolutely nothing.
Nice.
We're just executing every single day.
That's absolutely fantastic. Well, Paul, thank you very much for being a guest on our show today.
It's a pleasure. It's great talking with you both.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic with episode 37 very soon.